Season 5, Episode 18, I Don't Want to Die. It opens up with Russell coming into the house where Simone is already... Not Simone. Sipowicz is already there. And Simone follows her in. And there's a bit of awkwardness because they're wondering why Sipowicz is even there. As it turns out, Sipowicz has a test that morning, I guess in the next hour or so, but he decided to come into work for like 30 minutes or something.
But they didn't know that he had the appointment.
I think they did, because the way Simone was like, "Hey, you alright?" And he goes, "Yeah, going in for the test." And then when he explained, like, "I figured I'd come in and then go," Simone was like, "So what are you doing here?"
I read that. Maybe I didn't pay attention enough to the dialogue, but I read that scene as like Sipowicz was there early and he was like nervous, not doing anything.
Oh yeah, it might be.
And that made Simone and Diane, because Simone and Diane were like, "What the hell? Like, what's going on? Are you cool?" And Sipowicz didn't say anything until he kind of gave Diane that look of like, "I want to talk to my partner," mm-hmm. and she walked away, and then he was able to whisper to Simone like, "Oh, I'm going in for this test, blah, blah, blah," and because he didn't want, like, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Either way, Sipowicz shouldn't be at work.
He was literally working for 35 minutes, which makes no sense. Yeah. Just don't come in.
He did not need to be at work.
Then we have a familiar face coming in, Lori Richardson, played by Charlotte Ross, who is a famous face that will keep low-key, so we don't ruin it for people who are going through the show.
You said her name wrong, Kirk.
Oh, is it Laurie?
No, it's Laurie.
Lori Richardson.
Lori and Tommy.
They come in.
Bobby.
Well, what we learn is that Tommy Richardson just cannot say anybody's name without some type of bullshit attitude. Because he meets Russell for the first time this episode, and the way he says her name, you're just like, Jesus, guys. Like, calm down.
Okay, Diane.
So she comes in, and she's a little bit shaken up, and it's kind of funny, because when she walks in, Simone and Sipowicz perk up so obviously.
Like hunters, bro. they're literally like a pack of wolves, like, and they get a scent, and they're like, oh shit. Simone, and like, let's be real, Sipowicz is 2 seconds away from canceling his doctor's appointment.
Oh yeah, because she comes in and she comes in and she's like, "Hey, can I talk to you?" And he's like, "Sure, yeah, you want to talk? Yeah, we could talk." And then as Russell comes back from the bathroom, Simone was like, "Hey, this is Diane Russell, another detective. This is Lori Richardson, Tommy's wife." And it's the way he says it almost was like, "Yeah, you know I already told you about this when she wasn't here." I feel like anyone could have kind of
picked up on that for sure. Yeah, it was not subtle at all.
And Russell takes her to the coffee room after, you know, Simone was like, "Hey, you want to take Lori to the coffee room?" And Russell takes her in, tries to make her comfortable. And then Sipowicz was seriously like, he's like, "She wants to talk about that murderer and asshole." And he's like, "Yeah, you got a test you got to go to." And he's like, "But I want that son of a bitch."
I'm telling you, dude, he'd rather die.
It kind of gets to a point where they just kind of look at each other, and Sipowicz is like, "Some pal you are, trying to get me to make sure my cancer isn't all over my body." And Simone ends the conversation with, "I'll have a good thought for you," and we go to the break. So
real quick, were you at all like, did it all trip you out when Diane was walking her into the break room and she uttered the statement,
"I know
we have pastries in there if you want to be bad"?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That was weird, right? Like, that's very weird.
It's also Russell like trying to comfort her, like, "We're nice, normal people who have jokes and good times." And it was true that she was like, "We have pastries if you want to be bad."
If you want to be bad. I was like, oh, that's weird. Like, not even sexually weird, just like, why not just say, "We got pastries if you're hungry."
Yo, bitch, we got pastries.
Bitches, we got pastries.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls. where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Alright, so I figured we'd go through the Tommy Richardson story first. Then we'll go through the most useless story in the episode. And then
which one is that?
That's the one with Kirkendall and Medavoy.
Oh, I forgot that they were even in this one.
And it's very weird because their story contains two scenes that are 100% useless. It just gives Dolores and fancy lines.
That's right, she catches Dolores dancing in the bathroom.
And they walk to Fancy to run down the case for him. The only time they run down for Fancy, which is something they usually do every episode, like every detective does, they run down what they got for Fancy. The only time it happens in this episode, it seems like it only exists to show him eating a donut. And then I figured we'd finish with the title sake, where what happens to Sipowicz. Anyway. Russell and Simone take Lori into the break room and try to get the information out of her, see what she wants to talk about. Turns out Tommy called another woman, so this would be the second cheating woman that he's been doing. She redialed the number on him, and then he warned her about the consequences, and Russell lifts up her shirt sleeve and she has a huge scary ass bruise, and Lori is, without saying it, just saying, maybe you could talk to this woman to get information out of her, because clearly Tommy has been threatening to hurt me but not saying that he's gonna hurt me.
Yeah, and she's like, she's like obviously scared from the moment she like goes into to talk to them. And what an idiot to send your wife back to your place of work where those guys are.
Yeah, I think that Tommy, I mean, obviously we'll get into it more as we deal with Tommy. He's completely delusional in his selfishness and complete assholery, because he's like, yeah, go down and get my time records. By the way, I'm on vacation until the transfer goes through. So I'm going to use that time to fuck around on you and not give a shit about our child or do anything for the family.
Oh, well, he gives a shit about the child only when you call her Tiffy.
He only gives a shit about the child when it could come out that he's a murdering, cheating piece of shit.
Yeah. Then he cares about that child.
Simone lets Lori know that they're going to look into it, and she has a breakdown in Russell's arms. Because, well, and, you know, she's freaking out because she also has a daughter, and she's worried that...
Well, I mean, she's scared for her life.
And her daughter's.
And she finally, like, is able to, like, talk about it. So I think everything, like, finally all comes out.
And, you know, it's a pretty good interview, and I don't really want to summarize exactly what everybody said and did, because, you know, it's a very emotionally charged moment.
And plus, we're two dudes, and we have no idea what it feels like to go through that.
We have never been abused by someone who says our names very disrespectfully.
No.
we do not. The next scene, Russell and Simone bring in Tommy's side bang on a no left turn. Well, failure to appear on the no left turn. The woman kind of seemed like an airhead, in my opinion, because she kind of just voiced her thoughts. When she was like, my boyfriend could have taken care of this. And then when they're like, well, who's your boyfriend? She's like, no, I did this. I'm going to get myself out of it.
Oh, for sure. But she's also definitely showing them, like, I have no brain. So immediately when we're done here, I'm going to talk to Tommy.
And we find out through very good interrogation techniques from Russell and Simone. He brought down her charge of prostitution to unlicensed massage, which, to me, it's like, okay, so is that just a fake charge that cops came up with to get their prostitute friends off of bad charges?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's what those are, for sure.
Because it's like, unlicensed massage, it's like, okay, come on. Like, I feel if there was any judge who had somebody in front of them for unlicensed massage, be like, okay, so which cop are you banging? What's her name? Nadine?
Nadine. The fuck is the name of their kid, Nadine?
you know, people that want their kids to get arrested for unlicensed massage.
Is this a Roseanne episode? Nadine and Darlene hanging out with each other and shit.
The only thing we can guarantee is that eventually someone will get kicked off for too much Ambien. Okay, so with Nadine Crawford, who they have in the room, they bring up the homicide and they freak her out. But it's funny because they're like, yeah, we think he did this murder. And she's like, well, that has nothing to do with me. And he's like, how often have you been seeing Tommy Richardson? She's like, I know Tommy Richardson. I've been seeing him very casually. And it's like, okay, well. And then Russell's like, have you been seeing him more lately? That's because he murdered his other girlfriend.
He casually puts his dick in my mouth.
Very cash. Super cash.
Very cash. Super cash. Super cash. We wear flannels and shorts.
He never wears a tie when he's getting some.
Shirts are always untucked.
She says that she'll help him out and give him a call if he becomes talkative, but even they know that that was all bullshit, and she's just going to run and tell Tommy what happened. And then there's this moment after she leaves, and they agree that Nadine's just going to tell Tommy that Simone and Russell are like, well, if he admits it to anybody, it's going to be his wife. And Russell's like, well, she's going to take a pretty good beating before that happens. And Simone kind of goes like, what do you want me to do, Diane? It's kind of like this sad thing, because it's like, Simone's like, obviously I don't want that to happen, but it's the only avenue to get what we need.
It's like what I think it was earlier in an earlier episode you see with Sipowicz keeps breaking up that man and woman who keep fighting each other. It's like in the first, like, it's like in the third or fourth season. The woman keeps saying, like, oh, he's going to change, blah, blah, blah. But, like, Sipowicz knows every time he, like, leans on him, she's going to get beat. But he has to do something. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't as a cop. Because it's like you can't let the person just get away with beating his wife. But then at the same time, if you come at him and, like, go at him, he's just going to turn all that around and all that anger and hate that he has for you around onto his wife. So you're putting her in a worse situation.
It's
really fucked up.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where, especially in this episode, where you see, like, insane examples of domestic abuse. Where you're just like, yeah, if only we were allowed to just beat this man in the street with an inch of his life. And then he loses everything he loves just for doing this to someone. If only we could do that as a society. Because I understood that back in the day, at least with, rest in peace, Sir Sean Connery, that you can hit a woman with an open hand, as long as it's not a closed fist. Now that we've evolved past that, can't we have more stern consequences for those people?
Oh, for sure. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, like, because the whole thing is, like, we can't do anything because the person who's getting beat the person who's getting abused isn't pressing charges. My whole thing is, like, okay, no, like, I get we live in this world where it's, like, let people have the freedom to choose, freedom to do whatever they want, blah, blah, blah. And that's great. But, like, sometimes maybe we have to step in because people just, like, quite don't understand everything and can't, like, they don't understand the psychological effects behind it. You know what I mean? And then maybe, I don't know what it is.
Well, let's continue the story just so because when we get to the last scene for the Simone Russell Tommy situation, because there's a pretty interesting point that I never realized until, like, the third time watching that scene specifically. The next time we see Simone and Russell, they're sitting in the house, and then Tommy Richardson shows up in plain clothes, and Simone is sitting drinking his coffee like it ain't no thing, and he says, Tommy, we got your message that you wanted to come in. And then Tommy says, do you want a list? And Simone, being cheeky, is like, what's this list? What do you want? He's like, do you want a list of people that I may have gone out with whose heads you can mess with? And he goes, hey, have you met Diane? And Tommy goes, no, but you hear rumors.
Yeah.
And then Diane, because, you know, Diane wants to stir the pot, she says, is he talking about the semi-pro that we talked to earlier? And then Tommy, with his names, he goes, her name is Nadine Diane.
Yeah, Diane.
And then Simone says something, and Tommy goes, "Oh, that's different from what you and from what's happening." And when you put, what did he say? I didn't write down the quote.
About whatever you put between her legs, or something like that. That's, or what you're putting between this one's legs.
Yeah, he's like, that's different from what you're putting between this one's legs. And the way Simone gets up, I was like, oh my god! If Simone got up from the desk and looked at me like that, I'd be ready to run.
Oh no! If that was like real life, that was a fight.
That was fight
like,
time.
Simone wouldn't have walked over like. Talk to him politely, I think, after that. I think in real life it would have escalated a lot faster.
Simone gets up slowly and Diane makes a small dick joke, saying what you put between Nadine's legs didn't amount to much. And
yeah, she was quick with it, too.
And then...
like, she had small dick joke loaded.
It's pretty clear that Diane, when she's not working in the department, she's working on her small dick material.
She's a stand-up.
And it's all small dick jokes.
When Bobby falls asleep,
she's there with a pad.
She sneaks out to like the cellar and just does like a quick 15.
She's out at Caroline's, you know, just rocking them small dick jokes.
Just doing open mics.
Really grinding, really getting into it. Well, she says that, and then Simone, my favorite line of the episode. He goes, "So you came here looking to get your ass kicked, or?" Tommy, or are you here to steal something for the property room?
Yeah, because like one of the best parts is you see when Simone says you came here to get your ass kicked, Tommy's whole demeanor changes.
He also backs up. You can see him back up, and you notice that it looks like Simone has a couple inches on him and probably more reach, and he's getting ready to kick his ass. Tommy then goes, "I'm here to tell you," and then he pauses. And then Diane says, "Check your pockets, maybe you wrote it down."
Again, quick, dude. Quick with it.
And then he says, "Messing with people that he knows will not work. The case comes down to physical evidence and specific incrimination of me, which you don't have." And he puts his pinky up to count. And Diane says, "Nadine was doing that. What does that mean?" And it was like, geez, Diane. Just going at him with the small dick jokes.
Maybe, like, or is it one of those things where it's like she's projecting what she feels. Like, maybe Bobby's rocking a small dick.
Yeah, but his pussy eating game is really strong.
He's got that big chin, dude.
and you know what else? He listens. Anyway.
But he's got that big chin, though, you know?
I mean, who are we kidding? He's got a huge dick. He's rocking large. He's Simone.
Yeah, you're not that tall.
He's got a kickstand.
Yeah, we call him Tripod in the...
Anyway, after he leaves and smacks the wall as he leaves, they go to the bathroom where Laurie Richardson is with a couple other cops, and she says, "Okay, I'll wear a wire."
Which, okay, do we put civilians in wires?
I mean, I guess we do. I mean, they do it with other people. Like, they do it with other informants and suspects to get information.
Yeah, but, like, a cop's there. They try to at least have a cop there. Well, like, when Joey Pants was helping Fancy with his thing, excuse me, they had a cop there.
Well, they technically did have a cop there in the next scene. They're there. They're just not very close.
But they had Sipowicz with him. When Joey Pants was setting up that thing, they had Sipowicz go with him and be like the like they at least had a cop there. I don't know. Yeah, when Diane was when they were trying to catch that guy who was like a serial rapist and they thought they had him. And then, so they found a woman that he was gonna go attack, so then they set up in her room, but the cops were there. Like, so it's like, it was weird that they just sent her into the room without them even being close. Like, they were outside, yeah, but like, shit can escalate real quick.
Yeah, they should have been like in the next room or something.
It was just interesting that they were just like, "Oh, hey, this woman who has no idea, like, what it is to be a cop and seems like a scared, like, hurt little, like, deer. Yeah, let's put her in a super dangerous situation. I think she can handle it."
Let's ratchet it up to 100. Well, the next scene, Simone and Russell are in a car outside the Richardsons, and they mention that cold is her code word.
Which I think, no offense,
it's a terrible
that's a
bad
word. Code word.
It's a bad code word.
Terrible. Like, you could use the word cold for anything.
And in, I almost said, like, while watching it, I was like, how is she going to work cold into this beating?
Yeah. Like, and he could have come home and been like, what the fuck's up with this food? And she not even thinking, could be like, oh my god, is it cold? And then it's over. You know what I mean? Like,
and like, they just run
like,
in.
Oh, I'm feeling sick. And then she could just be like, oh, do you have a cold? It's over. Like, she, like, it's a dumb, it's the dumbest fucking, anyways.
Yeah, like, it should have been banana. Or, like, Mississippi. Something that you don't say all the time.
Yeah.
Come on, Lori, get your shit together. You see, if it was a cop, this kind of situation wouldn't happen. It wouldn't be cold.
It wouldn't be cold.
Tommy shows up, and he's a straight dick. She goes, like, hi, Tommy. He goes, hi, Lori. He does another name situation.
But I feel him, though. Like, have you just ever been annoyed by someone just by, like, the way their personality is from the jump?
You mean your wife?
No. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about, like, just saying hello to, like, you're just at a certain energy level.
I know what you mean.
You say hello to someone, and they hit you with some energy, and you're just like, no, that's not happening.
I am not meeting you at the same level right now.
Yeah. We are not. Like, I'm never going to meet you there, and I'm going to be an asshole about it.
Well, I mean, Tommy's like, look, the cops are really screwing up my flawless murder and my side bang. It's been a really tough day, Lori, and I don't want your positive energy and this lovely dinner you made me.
This constant bitching.
So, Tommy sits down at the table, starts eating a salad like a fucking caveman, and she brings him a Schlitz, which I don't know anything about Schlitz, but it's immediately suspect if that's what the dude's drinking.
Fuck, what the fuck is Schlitz?
It's a beer.
Oh, you're paying attention to the wrong, so many different things.
I don't know why, but I noticed the logo immediately. Like, I was like, first off, if you're gonna be white trash, drink Pabst, because it's awesome.
I don't know the name of the beer, but it was the beer that was always in Workaholics and It's Always Sunny.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
That's the only beer that I always notice. I will always notice it when it's on TV. I'll be like, oh shit, that beer. But any other beer, any other label, I just totally can't even see.
You got beer blindness.
Beer blindness.
So Tommy sits down. He's like, where's the little one? And she's like, oh, I sent her to my mom's house. And he's like, you don't let me know? Don't explain nothing? Just make me ask?
Which is weird, because you came in with the vibe of, like, I don't want anyone to talk to me.
Exactly.
So, like, what do you want? Like, do you want us to tell you what's up? Or do you want silence? Like, you need to decide, bro.
She said, my mom will take Tiffy to school, and Tommy goes, Lori, Tiffy, Diane.
Diane.
And then she's like, well, who's Diane? She asks, who's Diane? And it's like, that's a pretty standard question when you mention a random name I shouldn't know.
Diane should have been the fucking safe word. You know what I'm saying? Like, they probably, like, he would have never, like, she's probably so blown away that he used that word today. You know what I mean? Like, he's bad at trying to keep his secret, man. He sends his wife to the precinct that's investigating him, like a dum-dum. And then he fucking, talks about a woman. He's an idiot. Anyways, go ahead.
He should have said Nadine. That makes way more sense. Because it's like, Nadine, yeah, you definitely talked to her on the phone when you found out I was cheating. But she's like, who's Diane? And he goes, why? And it's like, okay, well, obviously it's important if you don't want to fucking answer.
Yeah.
He says, just another mutt making my life miserable. And then Lori's like, you love Tiffany. Hey, note to women out there, or note to anybody, if you ever say to your loved one, don't say that you love blank. They don't love blank.
Don't say that. You love your daughter. They don't love your daughter.
Like, if you have to convince them that they love something, guess what? They don't love it. They're not fans.
There's a lot of dads out there that I've seen, like, be really into their kids. Like, they love their kids. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of dads that, a lot of parents just don't.
She gets a little more courage and then says, who is Diane?
Yeah, but she's, like, getting into it. She's like, who's Diane?
And he says, oh, you want a good beating, don't you? And I feel like that's an admission of women beating, so take him to jail.
So I think we're done. Yeah, like, we got somewhere to start.
Admission of beating women, which apparently isn't good enough. Then he drags her onto the couch by her hair, and he says something that made me laugh, where he's like, oh, first we're calling numbers, and now we're asking about Diane. It's question Tommy's integrity hour. Yeah, I tend to do that of men that are dragging women by their hair, Tom. Kind of a thing I would do, question your integrity. She keeps asking, and then he threatens. He's like, you'll see what I can do, and then she responds, so is that a yes, then?
I mean, I give her credit. She's got, like, balls. Like, she's going for it.
Yeah, I think she kind of said, it doesn't matter what he does to me, I'm going to get him to admit that he fucking did this thing.
But she, like, switches on a dime. She goes from, like, being, like, soft and, like, fragile to being, like, let's go, motherfucker!
You want to roll? You want to do this? We're doing it!
Yeah! What? Who's Diane, bitch?
We're ride or die!
Who's Diane?
Russell says to Simone that she's too brave, she's not going to say the code word, so they start running up there. In the time it takes them to get to the apartment, she gets him to admit it by asking him again. And then he said, yes, I killed Darlene, and now I'm going to kill you. So then Simone busts in the door, and he's like, "What?" And then Tommy's like, what are you doing busting in on a private conversation as he's holding her threateningly by her hair?
Yeah.
And he said, you doubt I want to kill you? And
yeah, dude, he has his gun like pointed at his head the whole time. Tense.
And he gets down on his knees. He starts talking like, oh yeah, I got a 7-figure lawsuit with the city. And Russell takes Lori, and Lori's like, did you get him on tape? And Russell's like, it's okay, it's fine. And she's like, no, he admitted it just before you came in. And then Tommy gets upset and goes, you wore a wire on your husband? It's like, hey, bud. Hey. Glad you're here with us.
You killed someone, dude.
You killed someone and you viciously beat your wife? Nobody's on your side. Hey, nobody's on your side.
And not only did you kill somebody, you killed a high school friend who is, like, good friends with your wife as well.
And you blamed it on the nicest guy. I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, and who has, like, mental problems. You took advantage of, like, the weak.
So, there was one moment where he's like, I got a 7-figure lawsuit with the city. And then Simone's like, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to take you into a room and give you the opportunity to add a 0 to that number. Which I was like, what is that? Does that just mean beating? Or is he going to do something else to
him? Oh, he'd probably just beat the shit out of him. He probably would leave him handcuffed and then fuck him up.
So that ends with a teary embrace of Russell and Lori. And we got two whole stories to do. I will do the completely useless Medavoy story, which I think the thesis statement is Medavoy is a bitch. Because...
Oh, gee, I've been writing this thesis with proof before this episode, so...
Kirkendall and Medavoy get a call about a DOA in a bathtub with a unconscious man next to the bathtub from an electric shock and an 18-year-old also in the room.
Oh, yeah.
After they check it out, the DOA has a bullet in his chest and was wet inside a tub, but there was no water. Mr. Ocasio, I don't remember his name, his first name, it's somewhere in here. He was knocked unconscious next to the body from electric shock, and he's wigging out. And then Teresa Ocasio is an 18-year-old who's sitting on the floor, who is trying to give off the like energy that like she's just a kid and she doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah, like lost little kid feeling.
They determine that Miguel Aguilar is the DOA, and he worked with the man who was knocked out, Mr. Ocasio, but. Other than that, they got no information. Before they leave the apartment, they find a chainsaw that's wet. So they assume that Mr. Ocasio got shocked from the chainsaw when he was wet and then tried to turn it on. That's what they assume.
Okay, look, dude, I don't, like, where do these people live that they think they'd be able to turn on a chainsaw?
Yes.
And
nobody would.
no one would hear.
What?
Especially in New York City.
What I love is they're in the middle of New York City, they have a chainsaw, and they're like, do you have any reason why this is here? And then Teresa goes, I don't know, I don't garden. It's like, hey, even if you garden in New York, you probably don't own a chainsaw. You're probably not cutting down trees in the middle of New York City.
What she meant to say, Teresa, was, I don't know, I'm not a lumberjack.
Yeah, that's
a smarter thing to say. Because gardeners don't necessarily have chainsaws.
The next scene with them, Jose Aguilar's brother comes in. Oh, I'm sorry. Miguel Aguilar's brother, Jose, comes in. There's a moment where we discover that Dolores thinks he's stinky, because that's important. He asks what he was up to. They mention, oh, he was found in a tub. And Jose was telling him, like, oh, his drug life and his crimes were in the past. He just lost his job recently and hasn't gotten another one. And he had been running around with a little bitch. And that little bitch is Teresa Ocasio, who he says was a head case, and his brother was done seeing her completely.
I think that brother is a famous face, too.
Is he?
Not a famous face, but he's a recurring character, sorry. Or he's a recurring actor in the show.
I'll have to look it up.
I think he played the guy, remember when, I forget the episode, but it's the case where, like, there's a shooting at, like, a restaurant. And the guy's last name is Escobar, and he brings him in, and Sipowicz brings him in for questioning.
Oh, yeah, I think that is the same guy.
And he says to him, like, he's talking about is drugs. And then at the end, the guy comes back, and he's like, I got some information, and he's only talking to Simone. And he's like, yeah, but then again, he's like, but I gotta go, because I have to go pick up, like, another kilo. It's that guy. He fucks with Sipowicz.
I think you're right.
Recurring character. Anyways, or recurring actor.
Just because I had to look it up now. His name is Del Zamora. Well, he was in RoboCop. Also, to be super racist, he was in a movie called Tortilla Heaven.
Yeah. I mean, anywhere with tortillas is heaven.
Spoken like a true kid from California. Anyway, the only important thing is after they're done talking to the brother, they actually look at him like, yeah, he was in a tub. We can't figure it out. Like, they straight up just tell the brother, like, yeah, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and that's how Medavoy solved this. Is he just walked around and went to everyone and was like, yeah, we don't know. And then they kept going, well, like, here's more information. And then he would go to, like, fans and be like, I don't know. And Fancy's like, well, did you try XYZ? I don't know.
Well, yeah, the next scene is they walk into Fancy's office, who's sneaking a donut, and then Medavoy is like, well, we found out that Teresa, who was in the apartment, is the ex-girlfriend of the DOA, so we might have a problem. And then Fancy's like, what's the problem? You just think that she might have participated in the crime. And then, and then Medavoy's like, yeah, that's what I mean. He's like, well, then you should go talk to her. And then he just leaves.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
shouldn't we go pick her up?
It's like, that was like the most useless conversation ever.
Yeah, it was so dumb.
Jill and Greg then go talk to Teresa, and she's like, I don't know why you want to talk to me. I already told you everything. And then Greg is like, yeah, you didn't tell us that you were dating the guy who's in the tub. And then she's like, so? And he's like, we're investigating a murder? Like, he's like, yells at her. And she's like, I know. And then Greg is, like, trying to push her and push her. And then she just says, he was pressuring me to have sex, and then he raped me. Now, at that point, the question I have is, Greg and Kirkendall definitely don't believe that, right? Because, like, wouldn't you have said this already? Wouldn't you have made some type of point to mention this?
I mean, I don't think they believe her based off of all the other stuff that they've, that they're, like, gathering and, like, seeing, but you normally hear that, like, at first, people who are raped, they don't come out right away and say it.
But just so, the way she's doing it.
It could be possible that maybe she waited and then said it, but I think also the way she's acting, I don't think they believe her.
Yeah, because it seemed like, oh, we backed her into a corner, now suddenly this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Medavoy lays it out saying, essentially, he had a bullet in his chest, and then your dad got shocked with a chainsaw. It doesn't take a lot to put together that he was probably cutting up the body. And she's like, well, it wasn't me. And then Medavoy turns around and says, little sociopath, and she freaks out and says, what? And Medavoy literally jumps, and then he says nothing. And I was like, well, that proves you're a bitch. That's just, like, the bitchiest move. When you say something, she responds, and then you get scared, and she's 18 years old, that makes you look like a bitch.
Yeah, he's terrified of that girl. It's kind of funny.
Then, after that, Jill goes to the bathroom and sees Dolores doing ballet, which was weird as fuck. And it's literally just a, hey, you remember Dolores? She does things. That's basically that entire scene.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you remember Dolores? She's a weirdo. Let's show you more reasons why.
They talk to Mr. Ocasio, who's out of the hospital. He's claiming he doesn't remember anything. He just suffered an electric shock. They grill him harder and harder until he just says, look, I showed up late in the development. You have to talk to her new boyfriend, Ernesto. I wrote Medavoy makes an asshole face like he cracked the case when all he did was keep asking them what happened until they just admitted it.
And he had nothing to go on. He had nothing to help, like, solve the case. He just kept going, I don't know, what do you think?
They then go into Teresa, and she's like, what now? And they're like, Ernesto, and make it snappy. And she's like, well, he wasn't that smart before the shock anyway. And then says, yeah, Ernesto shot him in a fit of personal jealous rage. And then Medavoy, like, in a weird, weird scene, is like, yeah, and he's going to protect you too, because you have some sick power over men. And
it's, yeah, he's going through something personally, I feel like, that they didn't include.
I think he just hates that, like, this young woman technically got the best of him, because she's getting off a murder charge, and he has done nothing to put her with the murder.
But did she murder the dude, or was he murdered by her new boyfriend, you know? Like,
this could seem like my personal brand of chauvinism, I guess, but I think what happened is she manipulated and convinced her new boyfriend to murder her old boyfriend because she's fucking crazy. But since
we have no evidence of that.
But since she can't, like, you could literally never prove that. Because what's going to happen is they're going to bring in Ernesto. Because that's the last scene, by the way. What could happen is they're going to bring in Ernesto. He's going to be like, yeah, she told me that this dude raped her. And then he suddenly showed up at the apartment. And she shouted like, oh my gosh, he's going to kill us. So I shot him first. When in reality, she probably called that other dude to the building. And that dude didn't even, or what's his name, Miguel, to the building, and Miguel didn't even know about Ernesto. Like, it would not surprise me if the story is she manipulated everybody to take care of this murder, and then when it comes tumbling down, she can knowingly look at the officers and be like, I didn't do anything, they did this.
Well, I mean, some of us are sexist and some of us aren't.
You know what, that's why I prefaced it, it could be my inherent chauvinism. I don't, because she's also, like, a fucking sociopath. Medavoy had it right. Like, she was trying to convince everybody she was, like, an innocent girl in all this while withholding important information, like the fact she knows who killed the dude.
Yeah. Oh, I get you.
Look, when I come home, I expect the salad to be ready and my schlitz to be open.
And I expect Tiffy to be at my parents.
Tiffy? Okay, last story. We'll make it as quick as possible. So, Sipowicz has to go in for this CAT scan. He meets Dr. Gupta. Dr. Gupta brings him in, and he's like the textbook definition of a doctor that doesn't actually listen to the patient. He just wants to get the shit done with. Because they're mentioning...
Yeah, because he keeps telling him, like, that he can keep... He's like, oh, I can give you morphine if you need it. Like, he keeps pushing fucking morphine on him.
Well, he's pushing the Valium. He's like, oh...
Valium, sorry, Valium, yeah.
He's like, we can give you a little Valium. it's the medical blindfold. And he's like, yeah, I can't have Valium. I have a substance abuse problem. And then he says it again, and you're like, motherfucker, are you listening? But Sipowicz is clearly uncomfortable. The part that really bothered me was Sylvia says, and Dr. Talbot let you know that he's very claustrophobic. And he's like, yeah, a lot of people are. He's like, yeah, well, I'm not a lot of people. I'm me. I'm a fucking human being. Could you listen to my problems, please? You're trying to help me.
Yeah, but I mean, look, at the same time, like, I get it. You're claustrophobic. I get it. Like, you're uncomfortable in small spaces. At the same time, like, let's put some big boy pants on. These dudes are trying to make sure that they can keep you alive. So let's put some big boy pants on and just, like, suck it up for a bit. I know it's going to be claustrophobic. I know you don't like people touching you. But would you rather be dead?
The thing that was, like, annoying to me about it is Sipowicz is like, okay, I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my best. And then clearly they put in the dye and he's like, looks, I'm not feeling very well. Something's freaking out. And you're like, okay, anxiety attack. You'll be fine. And then when he keeps saying it, I was like, okay, I feel like I know the character Sipowicz, that it's not just anxiety at this point. He's like, let me out of here, I'm going to punch you, but he's not yelling. Because if it was Sipowicz just freaking out, he'd be, like, screaming and cursing. But he's like, let me out of here, I can't, I'm going to punch you. Like, the way he was talking, I was like, oh shit, something's happening. And because of the way they landed on allergy, I was like, oh, it's an allergic reaction, clearly.
Like, they kept pushing the shellfish thing, you know?
Yeah, like, are you allergic to shellfish? And he's like, he doesn't eat...
And then he's like, well, I don't eat shellfish. So they're basically, like, putting that out there, like, oh, he doesn't know, you know?
And then another thing that happens that makes Gupta a piece of shit, he's, like, having some type of a reaction, allergic reaction, and then he goes to CCU, which is the critical care unit. Thanks to some experience in hospitals, that's not where you go right away. You would take him to the emergency room because there's an emergency. He's having a violent allergic reaction.
Yeah, an attack to something.
So when he shows up to the CCU, the guy who helps him out, we find out, is Dr. Sampson. He's like, good thing we had an open bed. Any particular reason you didn't take him to the ER? And I think that's foreshadowing, and I may be wrong, I think that's foreshadowing for Hearts and Souls, the episode that we don't really want to get to, but we're going to have to eventually.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's doctors who don't want to basically take him somewhere that shows that he may have messed up. It's hard to say what actually happens, but it's a doctor going like, if I take him to ER, that implies I've done something wrong. But if I take him to CCU, that just means I discovered something that somebody else needs to take care of.
And fix.
And he has a moment where, I mean, Samson, you know, he takes control. He tells Sipowicz he's got to give him some morphine to get the pain under control while they work on the other stuff. He does the scary thing, which is he takes Sylvia away and says, you'll be able to see him in a minute, but we got to help him out. And then after...
But also, I don't know, I wouldn't say that's scary. I just feel like that's a work area. She can't be there.
Well, it's scary when you're next to somebody, and then the doctors tell, like, even though I 100% agree with you, and that's why I wouldn't be offended or scared, but it is scary to a person who doesn't know, like, oh, I've been next to my husband this entire time. Then all of a sudden, they, like, grab your hands and they go, we really need you to leave. Like, that's usually kind of scary times. And then, of course, Dr. Gupta, being a douchebag, as he walks next to Sylvia, he's like, yeah, this happens sometimes. And Sylvia kind of...
Yeah, that's the thing that made me really... I feel like that was the point that drove home that guy, Gupta guy, sucked.
When you walk by somebody as there's an emergency and say to their significant other, yeah, this happens. It happens, you know.
Yeah, this should happen. This just happens. My bad.
The next time we see Sipowicz, he is definitely on drugs, and he's in a bed. Dr. Talbot shows up, and Sipowicz throws up his hands and goes, everything went haywire! He makes fun of Dr. Samson's name, like Samsonite luggage, Samson and Delilah. He makes jokes when they give him his test results, because he obviously doesn't know what they're talking about. They said it's probably not a heart attack, but they have to do tests. This is also where they suggest it was probably the dye that he had an allergic reaction to, but they can't.
Yeah.
They can't be positive if that caused a heart problem or there was no heart problem to begin with. So they have to keep him in the hospital. They're like, oh, it's probably the dye. You probably had an allergic reaction. And then Sibowitz is like, okay, well, don't worry about killing me in the meantime. Basically, he's being a dick, but he almost died.
Well, he's on drugs, too, so he's being, like, funny.
And they start talking in secret, and Sylvia's like, do not exclude us from the conversation. And Sipowitz grabs her arm and says, don't let him throw you out.
She goes from 0 to 100 really quick, though. She needs to chill.
I mean, it's also a very stressful situation, and she's also fairly intelligent, and she doesn't want to be excluded from what's happening.
No. Yeah, I totally understand. But at the same time, the two doctors are trying to be grown-ups and talk about shit, and Sipowitz is on drugs and acting like a lunatic. So, no offense, you don't get to be a part of that conversation because you're not going to contribute anything. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have excluded her because she needs to speak for him.
Totally get that's that. True.
But she took it from 0 to 100 pretty quick.
Sipowitz threatens to throw Dr. Talbot out the window. And then when everyone kind of just stares at him, he makes a face and goes, sad pumpkin. And you're like, yep, he's definitely high.
Like, they need to have a conversation not in the room with him, because nothing's going to get done. It's like, nothing productive's going to happen.
Sipowitz, well, the next time we see Sylvia on the phone with her father, Sipowitz is telling her to make sure that Theo doesn't know about what's happening. Dr. Sampson lets him know it wasn't a heart attack. And after he says it wasn't a heart attack, Sipowitz is like, correct, where's my clothes? And that was pretty funny to me, where he's like, yeah, you're not getting out of there, bro.
Yeah, he was ready to leave real quick.
Dr. Talbot is already talking about the test that he's going to do as soon as they clear some other stuff. And Sipowitz can smell that Dr. Talbot plans on just doing whatever he wants, so he says, don't you lie to me, you jack-o'-lantern son of a bitch. And then he says how basically the mistake, while the mistakes are allowed to happen, doesn't make it any worse. And then Dr. Talbot, trying to be hard, says he needs to be tranquilized, to which Sipowitz says, my other favorite line of the episode, you pull a trank gun on me and the safari stops at the dentist, he's got the wrong elephant. And I was like, that's pretty good. That's just good. That's a good slam. Talbot tries to talk to Sylvia in private, which I think Sylvia should have done, but she says nope. Then Sipowitz gets more animated, more frustrated, and then his heart starts to beat faster and the machine starts going off, which is, you know, not a good thing and not what you want if they have a potential heart problem.
Yeah, especially if they told you to, like, relax.
So Samson gets him to calm down and the heart rate goes down, and then Sipowitz kind of, like, looks at Sylvia and says, I'm gonna die in here.
So dramatic, dude.
Super dramatic. The next scene and the last
like,
scene.
I get it though. Like he's afraid, he's scared, but like chill, dude.
It also doesn't help that they gave him a bunch of drugs because he's gonna be loopy and Sipowitz is already pretty anti-doctor, and then you surround him with doctors and tell him he can't go anywhere. And then they take moments to insult his intelligence and insult his wife. And then, of course, he's going to get pissy. That's just what Sipowitz does.
Again, did they insult his wife? I mean, they insulted his intelligence a little bit. But they're not insulting his intelligence. They're insulting his ability to, like, take care of shit while he's on drugs. Like, if he was not on whatever drugs he was on, and he was fine and sitting in the hospital, there wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, if he could control himself.
Because, like, we've seen from episodes past that, like, this doctor has tried to talk to him reasonably and sensibly and tried to relate to him, like, and be, like, fair in how he treats him and be like, yo, dude, like, you have this, we need to take care of it. So I just think they're just like, this dude's hopped up on drugs, he's speaking like a lunatic, let's just go talk somewhere where grown-ups can talk. Because, like, being a doctor and trying to keep people alive is, like, a serious fucking game. And they take it seriously.
Respect the game.
Yeah, Talbot's kind of a douche. Like, yeah, he comes from that old school like feeling of like, dude, I'm just trying to keep everyone alive here, and I'm not gonna sugarcoat that shit, and I'm not gonna like beat around the bush. Like, we just need to take care of this shit and move on. Everyone just needs to like take it down a notch, chill.
They have a meeting of the doctors. The next scene, which is the last scene of the episode.
Because they bring in the doctor that Andy really likes, right?
Yeah, they bring in Dr. Monzak, played by Titus Welliver, who is a famous face. He was the man in black in Lost, on the show Lost. He was also the main character in Bosch, a show I have never seen.
He's also a really good character in on Deadwood.
Sipowicz is in bed, and he's with the nurse, who... I thought she was, like... I thought she was pretty intelligent and with it. She seemed very caring. But Sipowicz in bed, and he's looking at all these doctors outside. And he says, "What's going on?" And she said, "Looks like they're shaking hands." Okay, that's not very helpful at all, but thanks.
Do you know who she reminded me of? She reminded me of the nurse in Arrested Development that falls in love with Buster. Because, like, the way that they played, they both those actors played it the same. like, the way they both, like, stand over the bed and how their arms are placed, and then, like, the way they talk and how, like, aloof they were, I was like, she reminded me 100% of that nurse.
We're gonna find out those two universes are connected through this nurse.
Then she goes, like, she straight up is like, they're shaking hands. You get to go home.
Yeah, it was. They cut to outside where the conversation is happening, and Dr. Monzak is with Dr. Sampson and Dr. Talbot and Sylvia. And Sylvia says, "Hey, I brought in Dr. Monzak because he's worked with Andy before, and he's a friend." And Dr. Talbot's like, "Another cook at the stove. And he's like kind of a douchebag. They cut back to Sipowicz, and he's like, "I like that Dr. Monzak. He was with me with my son when my son died. And he was with me when I broke my ribs. He could have put me on report, but he didn't." And I was like, okay, so the reason you like this guy is because he happened to be the doctor in when your son died. And he also happened to be the doctor that didn't do his job and report that you... definitely got
drunk, racially profiled some kids and then lost her gun.
Yeah, I would say he's a pretty cool doctor too.
He's a pretty pretty stand-up guy, man. He's about as good as his job as you are as yours as a detective.
He's like, "Yeah, I really like that guy," and he's like, "Talbot, I'd rather be targeted at a four-way intersection." And Monzak,
I think that's harsh. Like,
he really doesn't like Dr. Talbot. He is not a fan. Monzak essentially says, "Hey, if he's having stress-induced angina and you continually make him more stressed, you're going to actually give him a heart attack. That's kind of how it works." And Talbot's like, he needs to act like a patient. He needs to be tested and all that. And Monzak's like, "You might be right. However, if you keep him in here, he's not going to get healthier, which is kind of the point." And then Sampson agrees because he finally has somebody in his corner over Dr. Talbot. And Dr. Talbot looks at Sylvia and says, "If you go against my medical advice, you're going to have to go with another urologist." And she's like, "Okay, what paperwork do I sign? Because deuces, bitch." And the guy's like, "Fine, I'm going to go get you the paperwork to sign out against medical advice," and walked away. And then the nurse looks at Sipowicz and goes, "You're going home."
And then the music drops, and you hear, "I'm coming home, I'm coming
home." Sipowicz says, "Thank God," twice, and then the episode ends. It's pretty accurate of, like, hey, if the dude is having heart problems, and it seems to get worse as you keep him in the hospital, you probably shouldn't keep him in the hospital much longer.
Yeah, fair enough. I know, I totally agree, but then, like... Sipowicz is like a 50-year-old man. Like, let's be a grown-up here, dude. You're gonna have to deal with this at some point. So, like, yeah, I get letting him go now, but then as he's walking out the door, you better make sure you have the conversation that says, like, you need to come back here, though.
Yeah.
And you need to, like, put some big boy pants on and let us do these tests so we can make sure to keep you alive.
Yeah, and eventually they'll get to that. But he just have to let him... You just have to let him go so he doesn't make his problems worse in the meantime. And there was a point where he said, like he said to Samson, Dr. Samson, he's like, I might have prostate cancer all over me. And he goes, well, that's not something we have to worry about right now, which it isn't. Because if it is all over him, guess what? It's going to be all over him tomorrow, and there's nothing you can do about it right then, and the next day. So if you give him 72 hours to not be in the hospital and then come back, that's going to do more good than bad.
Well, I agree.
So it was good stuff.
I agree. But we have tons of evidence that shows that Sipowicz doesn't know how to act like a grown-up when it comes to medicine and doctors, so he needs to make sure he does that first.
And it took a different doctor to come in and be like, hey, so he kind of hates your ass. What you have to do is just do exactly what he wants, and then maybe he'll act like a patient.
I get why that's frustrating coming for Dr. Talbot, because he's like, I'm just doing my job.
It's true.
Like, they've asked me to do my job. I'm trying to do it, and now all I'm getting is them bitching.
Is there anything else you want to say about this episode?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I have anything else.
I do find it funny that they're trying to humanize Dolores as if anybody will care about her. We're all waiting for John.
You have been on a spoiler train about John.
Well, no.
That's like the only thing you're okay spoiling.
Well, yeah, because he's the best.
PAA, John Irving's going to come in at some point.
Because it was one of those things where I got teased. I forgot that he is the PAA, then he's not, and then he is again. And it bothers me that we haven't gotten back to where he is the PAA again. Anyway.
It'll happen. It's coming. We should have a countdown clock.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. And new episodes should come out every other Tuesday unless I get evacuated for a fire. Let's say that's one of the reasons.
But I mean, no offense, like, even then, like, do your job.
I'm just trying to do my job, okay? This pesky fire is being a real Sipowicz about it. And that's it. Have a good one. Peace. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. That would be greatly appreciated. It helps people see the podcast, and more importantly, possibly watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need to watch NYPD Blue, it is on Hulu, all 12 seasons on Hulu. It's also on DVD in some areas, but I hear it's harder to get the DVDs outside of America. Can't vouch, but that's what I've been told. If you need more information, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. If you didn't happen to check out the Asher Brothers podcast from last Tuesday, or two Tuesdays ago, I am on Twitch currently, Kirk Has Glasses, running public domain movies and video games, but I'm also in the midst of a fundraiser for Extra Life to raise money for children's hospitals. Head to Twitch at Kirk Has Glasses. You can donate there, or my Extra Life page, just search it out, to donate some money to kids in need. Also, in the midst of COVID, please wear a mask and distance socially, make smart, healthy decisions. Also, a quick spoiler alert at the end of the podcast here. We put a little bit about something that's a little bit of spoiler if you're going through the show chronologically with us and the podcast. So turn the podcast off now if you don't want something spoiled for seasons ahead. But if you've already watched the whole series or do not care, here's a little bit that was put at the end of the episode. Have a good one. Peace. Also, Charlotte Ross, I mean, if you've gotten, I'll put this at the end of the episode, you know, some heavyweight acting, I guess, got her the job as the second or the first female lead of the show in the last, like, four seasons.
Yeah, dude, I don't know what she did to get it, but she impressed somebody.
Because, yeah, she ends up being, you know, the next Sylvia Costas.
She ends up being, for a while there, she's the next Sylvia, the next Simone, and, like, the next Diane.
Yeah, she it's true, she kind of puts a lot of the show on her back towards the end of the run.
Because, like, it's all about, like, I mean, it's all, like, about Sipowicz, but he normally has these three separate people to go to, and then it's, like, at one point it's just all her.
Yeah, and the other stuff that's going on is, like, Baldwin and,
I mean, there's shit with MPG, but...
Oh, yeah, MPG! Zack Attack! That's so weird. I always... Oh, fucking Mark Paul Gosselaar.